we hate rainbow capitalism because gay. Whereas I know a lot of left-wing people who hate rainbow capitalism because capitalism. So when Chase Bank makes its logo rainbow for the month while a bunch of Nepo babies there are screwing people over, people are saying, you know what? Maybe you shouldn't take the concept of pride and co-opt it just so your business can be making money. Hey, everyone. I'm Cameron Caskey.
And I'm Tim Miller. This is FY Pod. Cam, you know, you kind of stand in as the child on this podcast, which is unfair because, you know, you're a grown man that is making a lot of decisions for yourself out in this world and has overcome a lot. But I do think it might be interesting to get your opinion on the little tiff between Donald Trump and Elon Musk that has resulted in Elon Musk's ejection from the White House, as is kind of the fashion in a lot of these sort of stories. You know, when things are happening, it's hard to know what's true and what is false with the gossip going on behind the scenes. But then once it's over, like once Elon's gone, the reporters do the stories that tell you, oh, so this is what happened. And in one of those oh, so this is what happened stories in the Wall Street Journal, they wrote that Trump has been going around to people internally saying that Elon is 50% genius, 50% boy, and that he doesn't really know what the hell he's been doing. And Mr. Don is very upset at Elon. And so I wonder what you made of that.
I think Elon is 5% genius, 25% boy, and 70% horse tranquilizer, ketamine. That's my best bet, which is why he can't PP anymore.
I learned a fun fact. I hate to interrupt, but we have some doctors that listen to us. Maybe not the FY pod, but some of our other material. And they let me know that the bladder problems that have been alluded to that Elon's having because of all of his ketamine use isn't actually about being able to pee or not. It's that when you pee blood. So he's been pissing blood. He's been doing so much ketamine, allegedly. So that's an interesting fact. I just wanted to add that into the conversation.
Allegedly. Yeah, you see a lot of these things and you're like, oh, this is hearsay. You know, all this stuff comes out of the administration. Who knows what's true? I have not been let down by assuming that the dumber it sounds, the truer it must be. So something like this, I mean, Trump saying something that makes his own decision making look stupid and sloppy, you know, that checks off a lot of the boxes of stupidity that you do get from the dumber side of the administration. So I think a lot of us were expecting the Trump-Musk fallout to happen fairly soon and pretty publicly and sloppily. We've seen some traces here and there of Trump-Musk conflict, right? Like when Elon's brother, who's on the board of Tesla, was saying stuff that was critical of Trump that obviously Elon knew he was going to say and cleared him to say. He's on the fucking board of Tesla. And a couple other things like that, you know, the notions we got that MAGA World was sensing how unpopular Elon was after their disaster in Wisconsin. So I think that the messiest days of the Trump Elon tiff are definitely ahead of us. But also, like, 50% genius and 50% boy, if you read the comment section for our show, that's basically what the Bulwark audience says about me.
Like, that is true.
Half of them are like, this dumb little kid needs to shut the fuck up. He doesn't know anything about the world. And the other half are like, this young man is why I've got confidence in our generation.
Do you feel any kinship with Elon? Like, do you feel any connection with him at all?
The ketamine is definitely the thing that allegedly brings us together the most. And also, I have never spoken to one of my children. And that's because I don't have any. But still, that's another thing he and I have in common. But other than that, yeah, I mean, look, I hate to bring it to the emotional stuff, but I'm the survivor of a mass shooting at a high school. And after that mass shooting, I was on television a lot talking about being a traumatized little kid. Mm-hmm. And that became the definitive thing for my identity for my young adult life, was having been this high schooler. So as I've entered my early adult years, I've realized that since my childhood was ended so early by this mass shooting that put me in a position where I was running this multi-million dollar nonprofit and I was going on the news and talking to politicians, I feel as though I am simultaneously way more mature than anybody my age and also more of a child, because I am locked in this situation where, because my childhood never really definitively ended, I will always still have some traits that, you know, the transition, the seamless transition, or at least normal transition to adulthood would normally make me shake off. Those traits are still close to me, while also emotionally, I have gone far beyond the maturity of many people, well, my senior. So when I hear 50% child, 50% man, that does feel like me. I think that I am more of a kid than anybody in the room, and very often more of an adult.
Okay, so then this is a good test. So Trump, in trying to manage the relationship with his genius child, after kind of getting him booted out, they had a – did you see the press conference they had at the end of the week last week? No. A goodbye press conference?
The one where he had the black eye and he looked like he was tripping balls?
Yeah, the one where he had a black eye and looked like he was tripping balls. What do you make of the black eye story? Me and Sam discussed this earlier. I discussed that I have some questions about it.
The excuse was that little X punched him in the eye, right?
Yeah, upon his request, actually.
Yeah, I hate to say the most inflammatory thing, because yeah, I don't want to be that type of YouTuber. I do think it might have been a fetish thing in the bedroom. I think he might be into some stuff. I don't know. Elon just seems like he's a freak.
And I was thinking falling down on ketamine was the
maybe
kind
he
of
fell down
razor
on ketamine. Maybe he was doing fetish stuff on ketamine. The world is his oyster. He can afford it. But the black eye wasn't nearly as concerning to me as the fact that he was like, actually looked like he was going to start slurring his words. He looked like somebody who, you know, was getting, he should have had a fucking breathalyzer. It was really weird. Can we throw up just like 5 seconds of footage from that, please?
In case we win, we can't lose that case, because we have the right to make grants. We're not going to make any grants like that.
Comment down below what you think was going on with Elon there. If it was drugs, if he was just vibing too hard, let us know.
Yeah. You know, you think it'd be hard to tell. Maybe sometimes people can block it out if they're, you know, if they're a long-time drug or alcohol user. But I got to tell you, as somebody who occasionally does the podcast hungover, the people in the comments have me pegged. You know, they nail it 100% of the time. You can sense as an outside observer. You know, I don't think it's a false body language doctor type situation. Like, you can really, you know, usually if somebody's licking their mouth like that, like, it's not just because they got a Jolly Rancher, you know? Anyway, I was wondering what you thought about the massive key that Trump gave him for key bumps. Like, he was like, hey, young man, here's what I'm going to kick you out of the White House, but I'm going to reward you this massive key. It's a gold key. We just made it up. It has no history, but it can be kind of something that you can keep and treasure. Well, do you think that would you be interested in getting that kind of reward?
It just makes me wonder, like, when are we going to get the messy falling out? Because this seems like the sort of temperate goodbye that people who are inevitably going to fucking powder keg on each other have. But the messiest days of Trump Elon are certainly ahead. And I think the further Elon gets from his position in the administration, and the more he wants to potentially even revitalize his public image and try to uncancel himself, as so many people do, I think he's going to start talking some shit. And I think Trump is going to start talking shit back. Like, I know that it seems like the thing a genius would do would be take yes for an answer, accept all of these regulatory cuts that benefit his business, accept all of the government contracts that he just got, and not poke the bear. But Trump and Elon are not exactly the most fortuitous people. So I think there's going to be some slugging happening soon. And maybe it'll give Elon a blacker eye than the one he had in the video.
Your lips to God's ears, Cameron. Okay, I wanted to, I've got a couple other topics I wanted to touch base with you on. It's Pride Month. Congratulations. And the B is right there in the letters. Number three. It's in the number three slot. Congratulations. I got an email. Unfortunately, I'm on all these MAGA, email lists, because I wanted to monitor a couple of MAGA people, like my friend Carrie Lake. And so then they all share their list with everybody. So now I'm on everybody's email list. And this one caught my eye in my inbox, and I sent it to you. It was why Gen Z is rejecting rainbow capitalism. Now, I'm kind of intrigued by that, because I think rainbow capitalism is kind of silly. For listeners who don't know what that is, it's, you know, the idea that, like, Chevron should have a pride float, you know, or that like they should have like that. I watched one of the sports teams I follow did a post about Stonewall yesterday, and I'm like, I don't know if we really need a football team's take on Stonewall. So that's kind of rainbow capitalism. So this person is saying Gen Z is rejecting rainbow capitalism. Like, that's an interesting take. Maybe they have a nuanced view on that from kind of a open-minded perspective. And then I saw it was on the Bongino report. And I was like, that's probably not the case. And so I gave you a homework assignment, which was to spend 45 minutes watching Evita, the new morning show host for the Bongino Report, which is an open slot because he got promoted from a podcast to deputy FBI director.
Yeah. I would say the most labor I have ever put into this job here as the Bulwark's plucky young sidekick was this. I think I've never felt more dedicated to a cause than I have when I was watching this Bongino report, specifically because so much of right-wing media that's so inflammatory in its messaging, when you actually watch it, it's boring. And it's like, yeah, if you're going to be this insane, at least Azalea Banks that shit and be fun to watch. But it was just so boring and exhausting. And the stuff with the rainbow capitalism was one of those interesting horseshoe moments where you start to see somebody on the far right say something that, when dressed differently, is something that the people farther to the left say. So with rainbow capitalism, the young woman on Bongino Report, who, by the way, gorgeous. Like, young lady, if you're looking at this, you are stunning. Slay queen.
She lives in North New Jersey. You know why I know that? Because her father is the Secretary of Transportation. And he was on TV talking about how he doesn't want his wife to go to Newark because of the airline issues. And so they're discussing on how his wife was leaving New Jersey and going to LaGuardia. So just a little fun fact for you.
Whatever makeup influencer she's watching, they know exactly how to make the cheeks glow. So I was watching this, and she was talking about how Gen Z is rejecting rainbow capitalism. And she brought up some pretty concerning statistics about how gay marriage is losing favorability among young people. Oh. But she was talking about this from the right-wing perspective of, we hate rainbow capitalism because gay. Whereas I know a lot of left-wing people who hate rainbow capitalism because capitalism. So when Chase Bank has its, makes its logo rainbow for the month, while a bunch of Nepo babies there are screwing people over, people are saying, you know what, maybe you shouldn't take the concept of pride and co-opt it just so your business can be making money. And people on the right are saying, like, don't make me look at gay. That reminds me that sometimes I've had gay thoughts and I don't want to reconcile with that. So the host got further into a bunch of the rainbow capitalism types of things, where there's truth in many ways to certain things that they're saying. And there's also obvious lies. They're talking about how, you know, the new Star Wars movies are bad because they put these gay characters into it and the writing sucks. And it's like, well, you know, I don't think the gay characters is the problem. I think the problem is that the writing sucks. But a lot of, you know, big movies these days will include more diversity. They'll cast things with more people of color. But the world of movies has gotten way more driven by financial analytics than it has by creative decisions. And therefore, movies are starting to suck more often. But since they're also doing more diversity now, people are blaming it on the diversity and not on the fact that business people are making creative decisions.
For example, The Birdcage. Great. Gay characters. Nothing wrong there.
Great movie. We love The Birdcage. Teddy Goff, the invisible best friend of this podcast, showed me The Birdcage.
Classic.
And that's a movie that, you know, I think woke would have a hard time with The Birdcage because Hank Azaria's character is a little not timely. And we don't need to birdcage these people. We'll talk about it privately. I'm seeing Tim in person this week. But yeah, so the rainbow capitalism thing, happy pride to all of our viewers and listeners. It's sort of that type of thing where people on the left and right both don't like it. But again, it's for different reasons. On the left, it's like, don't pretend to be an ally to queer people just by making your logo rainbow for the month while you're still screwing everybody over financially. And on the right, they're like, we only are okay with gay when it's a politician who's homophobic secretly doing it behind their backs.
I've got a lot of reaction to what you said there. For starters, it's a bad news for rainbow capitalism that I like gay and capitalism, and I don't really like it. So it's kind of missing across the board, you know? So that's one thing. Number two, as you mentioned, the gay that the Republicans like, and we'll have a, we'll go ahead and throw this up on the screen here for the YouTube folks. There's a new thing that's happening. There is a type of gay that Republicans like, and that is this man, John Reed, for Virginia. He's the lieutenant governor candidate in Virginia, running on the Republican ticket. He's a homosexual, and there was some controversy about that. Some of the Christians in Virginia didn't want him to run, but he like hates trans people, hates immigrants, loves Donald Trump, and so he ended up becoming the nominee. And so it was an interesting test about like, do Republicans dislike gay? Yes. But do they dislike other things more? Yeah, seems like yes. And so that worked out for John Reed.
Are they called log cabin Republicans because log is like penis?
No, I think it's related to Abe Lincoln somehow.
Wasn't he gay?
I think it seems so. John sent the tweet, John Reed, here is my pride flag, and it was a flag of the USA. And then he talked about how he's not into pride stuff. So
he's going to be our generation's slave Abraham Lincoln.
Pride flag of moderation is good. All right, so there was that. Did I have something else? You offered a lot of thought-provoking material there about the
Bongino report. As we do on this show, by the way.
Any other takes about the Bongino? Just report the vibe. I mean, it's an important chair that she's sitting in, the deputy FBI director's former chair. Was there any other insights that you gained from watching this really important YouTube video?
I think after having Ed Elson, Scott Galloway's cam on the show, and feeling like I'm such a bad, young sidekick, I after watching that and watching that gorgeous woman deliver the 45 minutes that I watched, I now no longer feel like the most inept cam on the market. Dan Bongino's cam is worse.
All right. Maybe we should invite him Vita. We'll talk about that off cam, so to speak. All right. I have another Gen Z topic that's been floating around this weekend. A Substacker called Taylor Lorenz, people might know. She posted a couple of these things, and I just want to read them to you. It was in response to somebody who was talking about 9/11 and how young people should have a little bit more respect for it. Taylor disagreed. Quote, "You don't have enough respect for the sanctity of 9/11 is such a ridiculously out of touch and frankly boomer ass take in 2025. 9/11 has been a punchline for over a decade. People are having 9/11 themed parties." That's interesting. She goes on, "Young people today will correctly recognize that 9/11 didn't happen in a vacuum. It was a direct response to consequence of U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East. The more you know about what the U.S. has done in the Middle East, the more you understand why many believe that the U.S. deserved 9/11. So I have a 2-point follow-up for you on that, Cam. Have you been to any 9/11 themed parties filled by Gen Zs? One and two. What do a lot of Gen Zs think we deserved 9/11 because our skirt was a little too high?
I have never been to a 9/11 themed party. I think I went to a party on 9/11 one year that was not 9/11 themed, but I certainly made a bunch of jokes about it.
Fair.
But yeah, I think 9/11 jokes are, I think we've gotten to a point in society where, you know, if you're doing it in a clever way, you know, it comes to a point where it's like, if you're being funny, you're being funny.
Sure.
I am guilty of having compared things to my version of 9/11 that were just like me getting a text from somebody I hadn't heard from in a while. But
it's good material.
In terms of us deserving 9/11, I think that there's a mix up that happens where people can say America deserved 9/11, and what they mean is 9/11 is the result of American foreign policy, as opposed to all of these people deserved to fucking die. And I think one of the things that happens online is there becomes a very blurry line between saying these two things. So when I was growing up, I was born less than 1 year before 9/11. I was like 10 months old or something. And when I was growing up, I was taught that 9/11 was evil attacking freedom from the sky. And where did I get these exact words?
I got them
from the original song of a gentleman named Joe Pags Pagarillo or something. He's a right-wing Twitter guy with a podcast. You know Joe Pags?
I don't know Joe Pags.
Oh my God.
He's supposed to be a niche character.
Well, so he's a right-wing Twitter guy, tweeted a lot of stuff about the Parkland victims, really rotten dude. And right now we are going to play just a little snippet of his original country song about 9/11.
20 years went by, still we wonder why evil attacked freedom from the sky.
Evil attacked freedom from the sky.
Hell so, yeah.
This is one of the things that comes up in a lot of discourse that I engage in about October 7th, where people talk about certain attacks being justified or acceptable or things like that, or a form of resistance. When I think that's an overcorrection to a lesson that we were taught that was not correct, which is terror comes from nowhere. I was raised to believe that terror was this thing that magically appeared in a void, and that evil hated America, so evil attacked America. And as I got older, I started to realize, wait a second, terror doesn't come from nowhere. Terror is a response to something. Now, does that make it justified? Does that mean the people who are being attacked and murdered deserve it? Of course not. But when I see a lot of young people responding warmly to these insane and murderous takes that, you know, we deserved 9/11 and things like that, I just think that this is the result of us responding to a miseducation that terror is just something that happens, and it's just this thing that spawns out of nowhere. And then we learn that, no, terror happens because of shit that goes down over there. Like, America fucked around in the Middle East. The West fucked around in the Middle East. And now there's a bunch of terror happening, and they're trying to teach us that we have nothing to do with that.
There's some points in there I really agree with, particularly, you know, the blurring of the idea of something being a response to something versus us deserving it. And I think that's a quite important point. We're seeing, you know, some of that even still right now with the globalized intifada stuff. I will, and I also should, before I get to my serious point, just throw on the table that as a freshman in college, I did attend a Bombs Over Baghdad party. Now, that was also an Outkast song, you know, so there was a little bit there that I think that gave us a little bit of cover. In retrospect, probably inappropriate. I'll say this, though, about 9/11 in particular. Like, your point about how a lot of the terror here was in response to some of our actions is, like, literally true on a lot of the subsequent terror events, right? Like, if you are a Syrian or Iraqi, or Afghani, and, you know, we were, and, you know, particularly if you're a young person in those countries, and you were experiencing a lot of death, frankly, a lot of insanity and a lot of stripping of opportunity and a lot of stuff that, like, you really didn't have anything to do with. I can understand the radicalization. Particularly, it's also true in Gaza. The 9/11 thing, though, like, we were pretty chill before that. I mean, like, we aren't perfect, but, like, in the 90s, like, Bill Clinton wasn't, like, starting wars in the Middle East, and neither was, like, really anybody before that. I mean, I guess we defended Kuwait in a pretty modest way. Like, the funders were rich Saudis that were hiding out in Pakistan. We never really attacked Saudi. We are okay with Pakistan having a fucking nuke. And it was really Russia that went after Afghanistan, not us. So I think in the explicit case of 9/11, I actually think it's unfair to say that it was even a response to what we were doing in any meaningful way. It was an insane radical person in Bin Laden that kind of conjured a radical ideology out of basically nothing.
Yeah, I also think that America and the West for a long time have been inextricably tied to each other. And that the West as a force had quite a bit to do with a lot of the things that led to 9/11. I don't think America and the West are going to be as tied together anymore now that Donald Trump is eroding all of the alliances that we built post-World War II. But, you know, these types of nuances are also not going to gel with the TikTok generation. And they're not going to gel with past generations.
The TikTok generation should just know then. Bin Laden was bad. He was watching a lot of American porn. And he attacked our greatest city.
Is that true?
That's pretty simple. Ton of porn. Bin Laden loved American porn.
American porn specifically?
Oh, yeah. When we went into, and also some of our other videotapes, he was into videotapes of American movies, but a lot of porn. I guess I don't know the ratio of porn to non-porn videos because I haven't gone through the whole ledger of what SEAL Team 6 came out with. But I do remember there's a significant amount of porn.
Well, and also one other thing I'll say to all of this is one of the first things, if not the first thing, that had everybody talking about Gen Z being 9/11 sympathizers and stuff like that was a viral TikTok video last year where Osama bin Laden's manifesto, or whatever you want to call it, went viral. And people were like, wait, he was spitting bars here. He was dropping facts and everything. I saw that and I was very confused. And then I read his manifesto and I said, people are responding to the things he's saying in this that they believe to be true. And they are saying, and they are jumping to this conclusion that America deserved 9/11, all those people that deserve to die. And I see these nuances get very blurry to this day. So I have friends who are very sympathetic toward the Palestinian cause, like myself, who take it very far. And they talk about how Hamas is a resistance force and Hamas is fighting to save the Palestinian people from their oppression. And I say to them, you know, two things can be true at once. The Palestinian people can be oppressed by a military that is systematically murdering women and children and forcing a famine upon them. But that doesn't mean that Hamas are these brave heroes fighting to save them. As a matter of fact, Hamas thrives on the suffering of the Palestinian people because that is how they get their power. And the same, I know this kid I went to high school with. He and I were friends. We stopped talking because I was too pro-Israel for him. Meanwhile, if you go to my Instagram story every day, I am talking shit about Netanyahu and his cronies pretty much every single day. I was too pro-Israel for him. And this happens with a bunch of people I know. I'm too pro-Israel for a bunch of people I know. And I'm like, oh my God, I am a bigger public hater than you ever will be, but whatever. I have a friend who posted something that said like, if you do not support the Houthis, you are not for the Palestinian cause because all resistance to this oppression is about the same thing. And I'm like, dude, Hamas like fucking kills Palestinians who are trying to get food for their families. Like Hamas and Netanyahu have one major thing in common, and that is they could not possibly care less about the death and suffering of Palestinian women and children. So when something like the 9/11 manifesto goes viral, and the 9/11 manifesto is talking about the state of Israel and the oppression that surrounds the Palestinian people, and I don't remember the manifesto exactly, but they see things in that, and they're like, well, he makes some points. And somehow we get from that, you know, the acknowledgement that terror doesn't come from nowhere and that there is a reason for all of these things. We get from that to all of those people that died in 9/11, America deserved it. And it's a real mess. So, no, I don't believe America deserved 9/11. I don't believe that anybody deserved to die in that instance. I also don't believe that 9/11 magically appeared out of nowhere and that evil attacked freedom from the sky. I think that the Western world has been deeply involved in all of the messes of the Middle East. I mean, mind you, with Israel Palestine, I think a lot of people conveniently forget to talk about a little country named England, but we'll talk about that another time.
All right. I want to just close the loop. I just want to say for the record, I do believe evil attacked freedom from the sky. And I mean it unironically. In the case of 9/11, I think there's some other cases that are different. I want to add from this, the TikTok, you know, it's a lot of reading, right? So for the Gen Z guys, you have to get through the whole manifesto. And I think they picked out a couple of the parts that I think are particularly relevant now, because he does talk about a lot about Palestine, which again is kind of a weird thing for him to attack the United States over, since he was from Saudi Arabia. But besides the point, he writes this. The second thing we call to you is to reject the immoral acts of fornication, homosexuality, intoxicants, gambling, and trading with interest. So bro was against porn, even though he was consuming a lot of it, all gay stuff, drinking, drugs, gambling, and I guess putting your money in a bank. So not not great. I mean, that's like not really bars for me. I mean, maybe there are a couple of Nazi kids out there for whom that's bars, that they don't want to do anything fun.
I was feeling similar things during Brat Summer. I'm not going to lie. During Brat Summer, I was like, okay, drugs, drinking, fornication, that's all out. I had had enough of it. Charlie XCX ruined it for me. But don't worry, because Brat Summer came and saved the Harris campaign. Kamala is Brat.
It's another great episode of FY Pod. We'll see you on Friday in person, Cam. And we'll see you all back here on Saturday with a special guest. Peace.